Well, folks, welcome to the George Lynch Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Legendary Gear, the game call company that is legend by design. Well, you know, it's at springtime, and I was talking about earlier this morning that in another podcast that, man, I love this time of year that, you know, I'm making turkey calls, I'm conditioning and friction calls, we're putting together the presses and making our diaphragm calls, and then I'm doing snow goose calls. So it's really cool, and we know this warm weather's coming. The birds are starting to migrate back. It's just a great time to be alive, and, you know, it's always great to have an old friend on and talk about old times, but I got a friend that we've been friends probably at least 20 years, and him and his brother both have been waterfowl hunting and for a long time, had their own video deal. Today they're doing a guiding down in northwest Missouri, and I got Ryan Knobloch on today, and we're going to hear all about old times, old stories. But really, Ryan runs a heck of a deal, and we were just talking a couple weeks ago, and all the work that he's putting in and their success and what they've got going, and man, he's learned some things along the way. And things that they'd started with and where they're at today. And I think it's great to have him share that knowledge and tell us a few stories of the old days and talk about what's going on today. But Ryan, welcome aboard, my friend.
Thank you, George. I'm glad to be here with you.
Pleasure to have you on, man. I was, when you and your wife were here the other day or other night, we stopped in. The work that you have, at, you know, I didn't know that you had, and we talked, but I didn't know how serious your camp was that you had in Missouri. And I knew you and your brother are always a serious waterfowl hunters. And you guys did some videos that we were talking that, you know, you had some success and you put them out. They were being sold in quite a few of the retailers around and stuff, but you kind of grew from there and, you know, and doing your thing. And it's just amazing the work, you know, the duck season, but before we get into the snow goose, and I know it's where we're at right now, but I want you to talk about this past year, the winds, the highs, the lows you had this year running your hunts down there in Missouri and the hunts yourself. I myself here in Iowa, in South Central Iowa, it was a terrible season for me, the worst season I've had since I've been here. And, you know, the goose season, you know, we killed our geese, but it wasn't spectacular as a geese, but forget the geese, the ducks is we had a short time. They were here early and they were spotty and they happened to be, you know, localized, and where they were, we had a good group of them, but then they were gone. And then it just never seemed in between there. We went weeks and weeks and weeks and the season closed. And of course we really didn't get the birds till this before this last big push of snow and the cold, but that was the story all over. But how did that affect you in Missouri?
Well, this season was definitely a season of adapt and overcome. Of course, the first few days are just stellar, you know, and then there's a row of light switches and one starts shutting off, and then, you know, it's just, they just keep going down, and you basically, you know, we weren't seeing the ducks. We weren't getting the weather. It was just abnormally warm. You know, and we were still killing ducks. But you know, we would change spreads. And one thing about our place that you have to understand is we're not hunting a feed. We're not hunting, you know, we're a 97 acre farm that we hunt the same place every day, you know? So we got to change things up because, you know, we're hunting flooded corn. We've kind of got a refuge set aside that we're hunting. And one day you might throw out two dozen decoys. One day you might have to bring in the mother load to try and work ducks and put out 400 duck decoys. You know, we run a combination of water and land decoys. And it's just adapt and overcome, you know, a lot of our guys that are kind of a part of the club now, are family, friends. We do a lot through our business customers and stuff like that anymore. So that's pretty neat aspect of it. We don't advertise to a lot of clients per se, but you know, friends and family, it's really adapted to that. And like the last 3 days of the season, we went from a 10-man pit that has all the amenities in the world to my dad and I sitting in crate boxes, basically, that we hand built out over, you know, flooded corn. You could fit two or three guys in there to hammer the green heads. And I mean, we were selective on our shots and we could hammer them. And, you know, like they didn't like a lot of calling one day, you know, one day they wanted to be talked to. One day, you know, the mojo worked. The next day, if the mojo was even sitting in the water, the ducks weren't going to look at us, you know? So, we took these little flicker things and we threw them into the corn just to give a little flash, you know? And it was kind of cool because it brought you back to the old days of hunting where it was just, you know, you, the bird, the call and the gun. And that was a pretty awesome time with dad.
Yeah, memory, especially with your dad, but you hit on a point. We're talking about the spinners, they got days that they worked, days they didn't. And back in the early days when they first came out, it I don't know if that really mattered. It was something new and it was the craze, but it worked on ducks pretty much. And, you know, it had its heyday. And then it got to where people said, well, man, they don't work anymore. But, you know, we did a little film on a little clip promo, I guess you want to say, or whatever, a clip talking about the spinning wings. And the spinning wing, to me, it's like anything else. It's just a tool in your arsenal. It's not something that was, to me, is an everyday tool. And you just, like the tool that you use, it has to be for the right job. And what job calls for that tool that you use. And with me, through all the studying that we did on the motion, the spinning wings, it's the days that it had to be sunny, that those, they still work today. And I think that because no matter what the duck sees, the spinning wing with sun, if you get back, especially on water and snow, the reflection of that white as it's been with that glare, it actually looks like white wings back flapping into the decoy. Take the sun away from it, it looks like this. It just looks like something moving around. And whether it's a difference in the height, a lot of people say, you know, all ducks don't, or geese don't like it and stuff like that. And I think there's a difference between, you know, ducks are more coming straight down where geese are lower and making that lower approach. And I think it's that visual effect because geese see ducks back flapping and spreads up or into the water all the time. But with a spinning wing, to me, it's like you got to pick your days and pick your battles. So on the cloudy days, I think you, like you did there, you pick just enough flicker. What it does, it's like a flag that you hit on the corners, and you do it just enough to draw an eye and to draw attention, but you're trying to create the realism of a movement. And so that's the day of cloudy days. We try to get motion on the water and get in the water to move. And again, today, you know, guys think that this tool is for every day, and the way we call it a geese or a rhythm, whatever you do on a duck, you know, it sometimes, you know, to the rule to me every day is the sides and, you know, away from you and hitting them and working them. But there's some days they might like it a little louder. Some days it's just, they want to hear just some feed and hitting them in. But, you know, that's what I like about when I was talking with you. A lot of people wouldn't want to leave the comfort of a 10-man pit that has a kitchen and a bar and all a heater and all that. But, you know, that's, you know, ducks sometimes, and people don't understand that's what's tough about guiding. The birds don't read the script, and they're still wild animals. And, you know, they just aren't on a leash and come in. It isn't like tame ducks. I've seen that in Maryland. It blew me away. We were sitting there hunting, and these ducks are coming in from from our sides. And the guy said, "Oh, that's the guy's got a mallard shoot going on." I go, "What?" And they raid mallards, and guys come in, they turn them loose, and when they come over to us, and we shoot them. But no, I give you kudos for that to moving, and that's what it takes. You got to be ready to make different. You know, you got to be flexible. You know, I guess is the best word to put it.
And like I said, adapt and overcome. And you know, there's nothing worse than, you know, you're like me. You put in all this work and you do all that to sit there and look at the blue sky. So we're going to make something. You know, we're going to do something, whatever it takes to make it a successful day. You know,
absolutely. So are you pretty much, you're hunting over flooded corn? You found that, is that the crop that you're using? Is it flooded? Is it corn that's, you know, bare field or?
Yeah, so it's a flooded corn, and I'm not an agronomist by any means, but that's my dad's forte. But we use, I remember him telling me this year we switched to it's some kind of Wisconsin dairy cattle corn where it's a much shorter corn. So we don't have to bring the water level up as high. So we used to use whatever we had before, and now we've kind of adapted to this shorter corn, so we can get the ears right at the water level, but we only have to have, you know, just past the knees of water. So we're not wading around in stuff chest deep. And that's pretty cool. So we have two sections. One section is probably 10 to 12 acres of flooded corn. And then the other section is millet, ryegrass, and then flooded corn again. And we kind of call that our quote unquote refuge.
So we're going to get back. I skipped a little bit here. I'm going to go back. I talked about the videos that you and your brother did. And how long did you guys do the videos?
You know, I'm bad with dates, George, but I think we did the videos over three seasons. And that was back when we were young and we were gunning and we thought we'd do absolutely everything. You know, we wanted to prove to the world that we could do this, and we had a lot of good times with it. It became something that was it was a great experience. We learned a lot from it. We learned what to say, what not to say, what to do, and that kind of fueled our passion. We met a lot of guys along the way. We met you. You know, we were talking. You gave me my first nice goose call, because I was never much of a goose caller. I was always I spent three seasons behind a camera, you know, and I remember I still have that call today on my lanyard, you know, and it probably will be there till the day I die. But that's what's kind of cool about you and I's relationship. So we did that. And then we did the videos and then kind of failed away from that and started doing guiding with another outfit. And then that kind of, you know, we learned stuff there. We went along the way. And then that's kind of then where the whole story of the farm comes in, you know, is after that whole situation.
So, and that's one of the things people don't realize with filming. They think, oh, wow, man, I want to do what he's doing. He's making videos. And, you know, if you got huge sponsors, it's one thing. And all that does, it makes it easier to the places that you're going, and maybe you can do better things. You can go to bigger places if you got the money behind you, but you still got to produce. You still got, and then not just shooting your limit. People don't realize some of the days you thought you had the best hunts, that you're going to get the best footage, didn't turn out to be the best footage. And, you know, it wasn't about shooting a limit, is that we had to shoot perfect footage. And that's when you started going out and started learning, hey, you know, and it was hard for me, and you can jump in. But when we were filming, especially if I happened to go to visit with someone and on an invite and say, hey, well, we're going to come film. I hope you don't mind. And, oh, no, man. Well, then they get their buddies in on it. And then, you know, they sit here and they're upset because why didn't we shoot those on the side? I could have shot them over here, and, you know, they could have shot them over there. Hey, we could have shot those flying over. And it's like, well, you know, that's not in front of the camera guy. And it takes a special dedication. And it takes a special thought process. If you're going to decide that, hey, I want to film my hunts and you want to be professional, you want to make your hunts look good, it's got to be in front of the camera.
Yeah. And that, you know, and that was a little bit of the struggle back then is, you know, of course you want to get footage, but then, you know, as well as hunting ducks and geese, you don't want to go out there and just kill four ducks. You know, it's not a one man show. So you need several guys. Well, you know, everything's all gung ho at the start and then things kind of crumble a little bit, you know, just the dedication from the guy that's filming, from the guy that's, you know, the host, which would be my brother at the time. You know, and it was all great stuff. It was all great learning experiences. But, you know, I think as hunters, there's some of us that have done this, you know, like everybody thinks, oh, they're filming, they got cameras, they got this, they're swamped in money, you know. And that doesn't, I mean, I remember one time I wanted to go to South Dakota so bad, I didn't go buy lunch for a week because I wanted to save all my money to get up to South Dakota and film, you know what I mean? And that's the way it was. And then it, you know, like you said, I've got a family, you know, my boys are older now, 20 and 19, but back then they were little guys, and I'm, you know, oh yeah, we're gonna have macaroni and cheese and hot dogs tonight because dad's got to go film, you know. And it kind of just wore on us a little bit, I think, was why we kind of stepped away from that.
Well, absolutely wears on you. And I guess the perfect life for it is, you know, young and single, and, you know, and all their buddies can get together. And I guess that's why those guys are so successful on YouTube and can travel. I mean, it's like the Hunting Public kids that, you know, do the bow hunts and stuff, and they travel all over, but pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
They're all single young men. I don't even know if they got girlfriends, but, you know, they're traveling, and they're able to travel, and they're able to put in that time that the average guy, or especially a family man, can't do. But I
also, not to interrupt you, but it also afforded us the ability to do what we do today. So I'm very grateful and thankful that we learned everything that we did back then, because now it's like we got to meet a lot of unbelievable people along the way. We, you know, like you said, with sponsors, there's still guys that we still can call today and say, hey man, I need this and this, and you know, they're like, yeah, we're gonna help you out, what do you need, you know. And you know, it's like you and I's relationship, you know, now it's awesome, you're 80 miles from me, whereas one, you know, back when we were younger, I got two or three times a year I get to see at a show, or we go hunting with the old boys, you know, and that was kind of cool.
States apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talk about the old boys. That was some of my favorite days, but I want to put together, whether we come down to your place, I want to do an old lynch mob, family reunion. I want to get McNabb and Abbas and those guys. You know, when I came out here, Kurt was with one of the first guys, and then Jeremy Abbas came on, and we had our group out here, and then Todd Vandenort, and Todd's a dog trainer, but great guys. And I used to love to travel out here, and there were so many times on 80 in the wintertime that I was telling the story to the people the other day that, man, I don't know how many times in truck stops I slept with my chassis in the back seat because the weather was so bad. And you'd get out here, and I mean, the coldest I ever got, Kurt and I and some other guys, it might have been Jeremy Marion, we were hunting a spot just outside of Des Moines. Dude, it was 11 degrees and it was raining. 11 degrees and raining. And I sat out there, we sat out there, and we might have shot a few geese, but I don't think I've ever been so cold in my life. And of course, this was before Sitka. You know, you're still wearing your old whatever Columbia outfit we had, and maybe Carhartts, but I'll never forget. And then we got, I mean, keeping the ice off the windshields and trying to drive home in that ice storm. And that, I got stranded here because we got hit with an ice storm. So that was stuff that you always expected coming out here, but I loved it so much because we had so many good hunts and so many good times out here, you know.
I grew up hunting the water, you know. I grew up hunting the duck boat. That's the way it was. And I think some of my first duck field hunts was with those guys, you know. And I was just in awe of the, like, holy cow, we can kill ducks in a cornfield too, you know. Like, okay, you know, of course I'm younger, I'd never experienced that, I'd always seen it, but it's like, man, we can do this, you know. We gotta throw out a few goose decoys and put up a spinner and the ducks are flocking to us. It's crazy. So that was always a cool thing. Was like, I remember we were off a place off the Highway 5 bypass, and we McNabb and Abbas and those guys, we just hammered ducks. And then you go from the ducks, and then it's like, okay guys, we're switching gears and we're gonna hammer geese now, you know. And we just, that was always, I loved those times, you know, shooting ducks and geese all up. That was pretty cool.
Man, that was a great day. So I want to put together a hunt with us, you know, everybody getting together, especially since I'm here. And I've been talking with Kurt, you know, Kurt kind of drawn out. He's got boys that are, like you said, you know, your family starts getting older and they're involved in their sports, are involved in stuff. Kurt helped out coaching baseball, and he's helping, you know, his kids are, you know, school and everything else. So it takes that time away. And you know, he's quite the family man, and that's the way Abbas was too. You know, your boys are, but his boys, I think I got Kurt talked in. I took some calls to him and said, hey man, just to light that fire, you know, and he kind of lit. And so he's getting excited, wanting to get back in this next year to waterfowl hunt. And I said, dude, we just got, you know, we'll do an old reunion hunt together, and all of us together. It's just because that was some of my best times of my life. You know, I had my kid hunting with Adam, hunting with me too, but with him and friends, and wow, those were the good days. That's when you really wasn't putting pressure on yourself. You know, it was just, we laughed. I mean, my gosh, I was talking the other day. Kurt used to do a skit, and something Phil, and Waterfowl Phil, I think it's what he called himself. And he had these glasses, dude, that, with the big buggy eyes, but then he had these buck teeth that he would put in. And he sounded like Fire Marshal Bill when he talked. And we would film these skits, and he'd stand out there and he'd talk about, well, he'd hold his gun, you know, and we'd sit back with piles of ducks, and he'd say, you're having the ducks go by, and you go like this, and then he accidentally shoots his gun, like it goes off. Abbas and I were throwing ducks in the air, so they're coming down. And we would laugh so hard, you know.
Oh, yeah, they were, those guys were comedians. And that's like, you know, like Todd Vandenord, you mentioned, Big Dutch. Dutch lives about 4 miles north of me, and that's kind of cool that, you know, not only, you know, Murder and Dutch, they're customers of mine too. So I get to talk to those guys on a pretty regular basis. You know, that's what's cool about that. So not only did it the waterfowl world, but then what I do for work, it you know, lasting friendship for a long time, that they're customers and they're guys you can still come in and BS with, and that's pretty cool stuff.
So how long have you been in this the outfitting and in the guiding, that you've taken it seriously? I mean, what you, and tell everybody so our folks know what you got. I mean, you got the pits and you got all this set up, and I mean,
So
you're doing it right, and it's the real deal.
Yeah. So we met in 2008. We met a guy that's sadly no longer with us, but we met a guy that he invited us to come down, you know, hit it off, and he said, you guys want to come guide for me? And we said, sure. So in 08, 09. We guided for him during the snow goose seasons, and another deal where you just met a ton of guys, and that was hard work, man. That was unreal. Like you'd hunt, you know, sun up to sun down, and he'd say, hey, we got another feed field over here, and we're going to pick up these, you know, 400 or 500 decoys, and I want them set out because you got clients in at 5:30 in the morning, you know, and that was some work back then. That was crazy. And we had a blast doing it. And then my brother went in search of finding our own property down in Northwest Missouri in about 2010. And we were trying to convince my dad at the time, you know, I don't even know how old dad was. He's 63 now, but we're telling dad, hey, we found this property down in Missouri. We want you to, you know, check into it with us. What do you think? And the flood came through down there in Missouri, and we found this property that a doctor out of Houston owned, but he only hunted it one time a year, and he really didn't know a whole lot about waterfowl hunting. It was a family farm, and we were talking to him, and he said, hey, I'd like you guys to lease this farm, and then I want you to take me and my brother and my family two or three times a year, and here's the deal. I'm going to give you the run of the mill of the farm, basically. You do what you want. So in 2011, I believe it was, in between duck goose season, we took four skid loaders and we borrowed a D6 dozer from the neighbor farmer. And we thought he was going to kind of help us build this duck farm, you know, and he's like, he takes the dozer over there. I get on it and there's no steering wheel, man. I've never been on one of those things. And in 4 weekends, we built it. It had the pump already there, but in 4 weekends, we literally built a bowl, basically a pond that we could begin to flood. And uh, that it looked like the face of the moon, George, because the flood wrapped just devastated everything. And we killed snow geese on the dirt. We set out our decoys that we had, which were very minimal at the time. You know, I want to say probably 1,000, 1,500 decoys between socks and full bodies, a lot of socks. And we created, that's where this whole monster started. We built that the next year, of course, planted it in corn and then flooded it. And we met a guy out of Nebraska that was making some pits at the time. And we hauled a couple pits in, dug these pits, put them in, ran electric to them, things like that. And then we just kept kind of going. But we were killing, on the snow goose side of things, we were always killing a lot of ducks. But on the snow goose side of things, we were, you know, 20, 25 snow geese. If we had a great day, it was 40, 50 snow geese, you know. But we were hunting the same place every day, and you know as well as I do, there's some pretty heavy hitters in Missouri as far as snow geese guides, companies, things like that. I mean, there's guys that know what they're doing down there big time, and that just, what's that?
And they're all over.
Yeah, all over the place. I mean, it's the land of commercial guiding services. And So we got to talking, and we kind of wanted to up our game a little more. So through one of our sponsors, we get decoys, and we just keep building our spread. And like I said, we hunt the same pit for snow geese every single day. From today's February 7th, so until about the week after St. Patty's Day, somewhere in there. You know, the old adage was Valentine's to St. Patty's Day was when you wanted to be there. And now we've opened, like last week we started, of course, we couldn't, no e-collars, no, you had to have plug guns still, but you set out the decoys and the birds, you know, not as many as you'd like, but the birds kind of naturally worked in. So just to get back to that, we kind of guided our way through those seasons up to the next flood, which I think was 2018, 2019. And we had kind of, I don't know, money-wise, things like that. We built this spread up. We've done all this kind of stuff. And my dad is getting up there in age, and he's like, I don't want to go to Arizona. I don't want to go to Texas. I'm not going to retire, but I want to build something that's going to leave a legacy. And in 60 days, we revamped this thing again. From the time duck season was over to when the flood receded and all that kind of stuff, because 2019 we couldn't hunt the pit because it was under 6 feet of water. We literally lost everything down there. And in 60 days we revamped this thing, and we built a lodge that it's got, you know, full locker room, 21 beds in it, 3 bathrooms, a full bar, commercial cook area, all this kind of stuff. And then we put in another big, we took our existing pit, took the idea off of that, and we had a guy come in from Illinois and help us, and we built a pit triple the size of what we had before, and like you said, all the amenities and stuff like that. And then this last year we upped our game. We said, okay, we're hunting the same spot every day. We gotta really make this thing go. And between the socks that we put out for motion and full bodies, we run 10,000 decoys now.
Wow. That's what you were telling me the other day. 10,000. I mean, how long does it take to set that spread up?
Well, last year when it all came in boxes and it was brand new, it was like a 2-day ordeal. This year, about 25 guys took us 4.5 hours
to put it up. 25 guys.
Yep. Yep. So we have a pretty good crew. And so what our deal is now is we take a lot of family, friends, a lot of work clients, things like that. You know, always room for you down there. That's one of the big things. I got to get you down there this year. But you don't have to ask twice.
Let me tell you.
Yeah. And then we have, so my dad, my brother, me, and then there's 3 or 4 other gentlemen that are, they're paying members to the club. We turned it into more of a club type situation. And, so everybody's got a bed down there. Dad's the chef. Dad's the guy. He kind of keeps this thing going. And, And, you know, the big rules are no boots in the shop. So there's no mud, and make your bed when you wake up every morning, because we want to keep it, you know, pretty professional.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I bet he loves that job. It's a great way to retire, but he won't retire.
Well, he won't retire. No. And I mean, he makes breakfast every day in the pit. That's his big thing, man. Like the other day we had McGriddles that he made. He'll make you know, biscuits and grit, and there's nothing better. I don't care where you eat breakfast. You can go to the most luxurious 5-star. There's no better place to have breakfast than in the duck pit.
There isn't.
You know,
it's nothing. You could have the worst, and it still tastes the best out in the field and stuff. So, absolutely. So, when are you going to start? When does the hunt start there in Missouri?
So last weekend we set up, and like I said, we test things out to see. I sent you a text message. We no more than had the spread set at 4:45, and we had, I'm going to say, between 3,000 and 4,000 snow geese hit that spread and land in it before we were all standing up at the lodge eating dinner, you know, having a few drinks. And then the next morning we went out, of course, no e-collars, no nothing. It's tough, but we shot a few snow geese, and then they started today. February 7th was the official start of the spring snow goose season. And I talked to my brother at 4:30, and they had 75 killed already.
Oh my goodness. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So we kind of decided, you want to kill 20, 25, 30 snow geese? Cause that's one of the things that people think, like, hey, I'm going to go on a guided snow goose hunt, and I need to bring 40 boxes of shells because we're just going to hammer 100 snow geese this day. And I can tell you, I've been on a lot of hunts that I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but it just doesn't, you got to put the work in, man. Cause it is, snow geese are a different character. They are a different character. One day, you know, you might have, you know, just piles of juvies, and then the next day it's all adults because of the feed that they took somewhere else. You know, you never know a snow geese where they're going.
Absolutely. No, I agree with that 100%. So you guys use a lot of motion stuff?
We used to use a ton of motion, and this kind of goes back to the spinners. I myself personally, the vortex type thing, stuff like that, I think snow geese have seen too many of those. And so we use a different form of motion. That's kind of our little secret. But yeah, we definitely use motion. Motion's big time. That's kind of one of those things that I think, you know, one of the things that's still tried and true that I believe are just those old, I don't know where you used to get them, but they were just on like a fiberglass pole, and it was just like a goose that looked like a windsock that just kind of flapped on windy days, man.
Yeah.
I love those things. Those work really well, you know, but we've adapted.
So a snow goose magnet, you mean? A magnet that would sit there, and you put them on a pole, and they would just sit there and put them in the shooting hole.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And the wind takes care of the flap, and there's no motors to them. There's no nothing. You know, I still think those are probably one of the better things out there. Of course, one of the biggest things with snow geese, and this is kind of one of the things that anymore I love watching how birds are going to react. Ducks, snow geese, Canadas. So for me, I'm always watching, like, man, how are these birds? You know, there's a lot of guys, they just go kill their birds. I want to know how things are going to react. In duck season, do we need to just feed? Do we need to bark? You know, no greeting, no hail, no nothing. Or what are we going to do there? So snow geese, we've kind of changed up our electronics, and we do things a little different. That's another kind of one of our things that we found over the years. We do things different there. And it works for us. I'm not going to say it works for everybody else, but in the situation we're at, it works for us. You know, we used to flood that area that we hunt snow geese in. And this is one of the cool things about two brothers doing this together, is he likes one thing, I like the other. And it used to be an argument. Now it's a friendly argument. But I think, like, in my opinion, when there's water on the fields, I think the electronic collars can go way too overboard because the water's the sound's bouncing off the water, and it's creating a false sound that they don't like. You know,
great point. Yeah,
and some guys may agree, some guys may disagree, but it works for us. Where we we change up our electronics now, and I prefer to not have any water out there. I prefer for it just to be a blank field, you know.
Wow, what a great tip. And now, when we were talking, you were telling me something that you did with the collar and the speakers that, you know, I agree with you. I think it's a great tip. It's a secret that if anybody wants to see it, they come hunt with you. But it's actually, I think it was genius. And I think you were 100% on with the sound. And you know, the e-collars back in the day and the Vortex, I remember hunting when I first did, Alan Lecter, a guy out of Illinois, he had the Flatland decoy, and between him and Art Ladihoff with Bigfoot were the only people who had full body snow geese. And then he made a Vortex thing that was 20 foot long. And, you know, this thing was so awesome and nobody else had that. And I'd watch him, of course, in Illinois, we were hunting a lot of what they called sheet water. And man, I'd watch one field of geese and I'd see, I know he was in another field and you see this big ski. And I knew when he turned on that spinner, I'd watch those geese just pull. And this is back in the day that, you know, nobody had any Vortex. And of course, after a while, when, you know, the guy's successful and someone's killing him, people are going to start watching and talk gets out there. And of course, like you said, movements, you know, the Vortex are all over. But if people want to come book a hunt with you, do you have a website that they can go to?
We don't really have a website per se. A lot of it's just through, you know, I think my brother, I'm not a big social media guy. If they truly wanted to come, they could probably get with my brother. His name's Ross Knobloch. You know, I'm sure they through Facebook or Instagram or whatever, they could find him, you know, look for the guy with the piles of.
We'll put some information on this podcast too. A number that people can get a hold of to book some hunts. Because today, folks, I'm telling you, I've done a lot of outfitting myself and hunted with a lot of outfitters. You hear a lot of the horror stories, especially down there in Missouri, Mound City, and everything. I mean, there's guys in every field. There's everyone trying to run a snow goose hunt, and there's some bad ones out there. But I will verify. Yeah. And Ryan and Ross, they know what they're doing. They've been in this game a long time. And, you know, I really don't want you to reveal some of the secrets to the guys out there. I think they need to come down there because I truly believe that it is a big difference what you're doing. I believe that's why you're more successful. But that is a key, and that actually says something a lot to you guys, you and your brother and your dad, is that, you know, we don't rely on one system. And not everything, you know, everything has its day. And then sometimes that day ends up, and like you said, we have antiquated. You know, these birds are evolving, and and you know, and you're talking about a bird who sees spreads from all the way in the highs of Canada, coming through Canada, through the North Dakota, South Dakota, through the Midwest, and down to Texas. You know, and then back up, and then they're really seeing every spread. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day from Arkansas, and it's just see how his duck season went. And he said, "Ma'am, duck season pretty good. When you know, the last 3-4 days, we did really good. Rest of the season was bad, but man, everybody's down here hunting snow geese. We got snow geese all over." And he says, "All the trucks are showing up, you know, and all the guides are down there. So it's really tough trying to find that honest one. The horror stories out there, I truly recommend, you know, to hook up with you or your brother there and get into a hunt. And I'm sure that you'll get a first class hunt, but you'll have fun and you'll be well taken care of. We'll put that information down on the screen. My wife will have that on there. And Ryan, I really appreciate you coming on. I'll have you on again once a season. In fact, I'd like to come down to your place. And Diane, I want to do some hunting. I want to do a little bit of filming, but also maybe we'll do a podcast right there at the clubhouse and talk
about sounds great.
The hunting that we're in. And but folks, if you like this, please hit the like button, subscribe to us. And I want to take a quick shout out to all our dealers. You guys like our legendary gear calls, and you know, whether it's our turkey calls, snow goose, duck or goose, or whatever we have, go to Captain Bones Bait and Tackle and Hunting in Maryland, or Delaware, Finn Feather and Fur, Outfitters in Ohio, Frank's Great Outdoors, Jay's Sporting Goods in Michigan, Keystone Outdoors in Pennsylvania, and we all know L.L. Bean. L.L. Bean's been a great customer of ours. Presley Outdoors, Kelly Presley and the crew down there in Bartonville, Illinois, do a great job. Roger Sporting Goods down there in Liberty, Missouri, and Sportsman's Warehouse. We have Dick's Sporting Goods and Shields now, and hopefully nationwide with Shields. So life is good. And Miss Diane keeps me busy tuning and keeps me at work. But I am going to sneak away, and I am going to come down there and shoot some of those white devils with you. I appreciate you, my friend.
Yeah, I absolutely appreciate you, and I can't wait to do this from the lodge, do it live from the lodge down there.
All right. Well, folks, we appreciate it. Again, this is the George Lynch Hunting Podcast brought to you by Legendary Gear. Always remember, hunt safe, hunt smart, and may the good Lord be your guide.
Well, I'll be out there, rain or shining, all a part of the great design. Bring it on, I can never get enough, because that's what legends are made of.